Hey, everybody, it's Andy. Welcome or welcome back to the Decatur City Church Podcast. At the end of this episode, we would love it if you would take just a moment to download the Decatur City Church app, where you can find access to all of our recent message content. And the app is the easiest way to share this content with a friend. But most importantly, I hope you enjoy the following presentation, and I hope it inspires you to take your next step in your faith journey.
Decatur City Church, and I know that what you're thinking right now is, she's been around since like 20 plus years in the organization. How is it that she looks so young? I know that's what you're thinking, right? I mean, she just looks too good to be on staff 20 plus years and all of that. But hey, I wanted to say, first of all, how excited I am to be here with you this morning, because Decatur is my hometown. This is where I grew up. I spent all my formative years just outside of Avondale Estates. I don't know, you probably know where that is, where the Avondale MARTA station is. I was there before there was a MARTA station. That tells you a little bit about how long I've been around. But I will say this, growing up in Decatur and Avondale Estates area, it was never as hip as it is now. I mean, you guys are a part of creating an amazing community that so many people want to be a part of, and I'm so glad to be here speaking with you this morning. So like Tinsley said, I am here because he's invited me to come down and share my story with you, which I'm happy to do. And he's right in what he said, that our stories are really great connecting points between ourselves and other people. But I hope what you hear in my story this morning is, that yes, every one of us in this room, we all have a story. No matter who we are, where we've been, what we've done, we all have a story to share. But what's a little bit different in my story today, and what I hope you hear, is that when we are willing to take our stories and connect them to God's story, it leads to a greater story. And I'm excited to talk with you and share with you about this topic, not only because it's been my own personal experience, but because in my role, this is something that I get to witness almost every single day as I sit across from men and women and they share their stories with me. And one of the things that I've learned in over 20 years of working with people is that all of us, we are all a compilation of stories that are continually being written. In this room alone, some of us would say, I'm ending a chapter of my life. I'm excited about ending this chapter and starting a new one. Others of us are saying, I'm so excited I get to start a new chapter of my life. But most of us in here would say that we fall somewhere right in between those two things. But make no mistake, our lives are ongoing narratives, and we have plot lines that are very real. We have supporting characters in our life, and of course, we have the inevitable conflicts and challenges that come with life on this planet. And as the main character in our stories, don't we all want to have them end well? I mean, don't we all want to know that on the other side of our challenges and the conflicts that we experience, that the end is going to be better than the beginning? Wouldn't we all like the last line of the story of our lives to read a lot like the old Disney movies used to end, where the big storybook is closing and the last thing you see on the page is the little phrase that says, and they all lived happily ever after? Because in a Disney movie, everything seems to always work out. I mean, they really do end happily ever after, and they manage to do it in about 90 minutes, which is pretty impressive, right? I mean, wouldn't it be great if things in our life could be resolved within 90 minutes or less? But here's what we all know. Real life is not quite that simple. I mean, we all know that happily ever after doesn't always happen. I mean, people in our lives make promises to us that they break. People promise to be with us and they leave. People promise they're going to love us and stand with us forever, and then they tell us one day, no, you know what, I've changed my mind, I don't. And on and on and on the list goes. And the thing is that in our lives, we can't always control what happens to us. But what I believe is different is that we can actually choose how we're going to respond to what happens to us in life. We can't always control what happens, we know that, but we can control how we're going to respond to what happens. And in my life, the ability to choose has made all the difference in the world for me. So I'd like to take the next few moments to just share with you about some of those big decisions that I made in my life. And one of the first ones, you kind of have to dial the story of my life all the way back to when I was 15 years old. So at the age of 15, the first big decision I really remember making was the decision to become a Christian. Now that should have resulted in good things happening in my life. That's what I would have thought. But honestly, being a Christian made little to no difference at all in my life at that time. One of the reasons for that was because I didn't tell anybody that I was a Christian. I didn't want anybody to know. Because I was afraid that if I told somebody, then one of the adults in my world was going to say, you should really go to church. And I did not want to go to church because not too long before, I had gone to church with my best friend. And I had the classic bad church experience. And some of you in this room may have had a bad church experience and you know exactly what I'm talking about. So I didn't really want anything to do with church. However, at the same time that I had made that decision, there were some other things going on in my life, and I would have told you I was in a desperate place. My home life was difficult. School for me was difficult. Relationships for me were difficult. At the same time that that was going on, all the challenges and difficulties, I was in what I would call the midst of transitioning from one eating disorder to another disorder. I remember the summer of my 10th grade, I weighed 110 pounds, and by the 8 weeks later, I weighed 80 pounds, and I had my sights set on 75 pounds. I just knew that somehow if I could get there, life would be better for me. Because of the kind of eating disorder I had chosen and was involved in, I knew that I had set into motion patterns that I no longer could control. This eating disorder was very rigorous and demanding for me, and it required a lot of structure in my day, and I couldn't control what was happening in my life, and I was spiraling, and I honestly thought that I might not survive, and where being a Christian helped me in that moment was realizing that if I don't survive, at least I get to go to heaven and I can be with Jesus and that's good. But in the interim, in the meantime, as I was dealing with all this other stuff, I had to figure out how I was gonna endure everything and make life work somehow. And honestly, that just wasn't going so well for me at the time. Now, if you fast forward 3 years, I'm 18 years old, I survived, and I got invited to go to church by a friend. And when I say a friend invited me to church, here's how it looked in my world. He goes, hey, Elaine, you want to go to church? No. Okay, next week. Hey, Elaine, you want to go to church? No. Okay, next week. Hey, Elaine, you want to go to church? And finally, what I realized I was up against was a serial inviter. I mean, the guy just wasn't going to stop until I decided to go. So I went to make him happy and to make him quit. And while I couldn't have told you a thing about the message that day, because I don't remember, what I do remember is how I felt by the end of it and just experiencing everything that moment. In fact, one of the first things I said to him as we were walking out of the building was, how soon can I come back? I mean, I thought I would have slept on the steps of the church if I could get away with it. So that's where I began to attend. And I got to sit under really helpful teaching that made the whole Christian life thing make sense to me. And I began to attend a class that was for people like me who were just getting their footing around their faith. And I've started to make friends, like really good friends like I had never had before in my life. And that was really, really exciting for me personally. And I was reading my Bible, and what I discovered was the more I was reading and learning about Jesus, the more I wanted to be like him. I was not fully aware, but I think I was becoming aware that somehow following Jesus was going to make my world a better place to be. And somehow he was going to help me to not be as relationally challenged as I was. The problem for me was, as I began to learn how to become more like Jesus and I wanted to experience the things that he said I could experience, I was rubbing up against the knowledge that that was going to be a long process that was going to involve a lot of decision-making that, quite honestly, I just wasn't sure I wanted to do. See, up until that time in my walk, things were going great. I loved going to church. I was enjoying the friendships I was making. I was experiencing growth in my life, which is why it was so awful for me when I ran up against the reality that following Jesus was going to require things from me that I wasn't prepared to do, and I wasn't sure I even wanted to do. And maybe you felt like that before. Maybe you felt like God was asking you to do something that you really didn't want to do. Or in my case, was asking you to do something that you felt like was just impossible. There was no way you could do it. I was in my early 20s when I first ran across something that Jesus said that for me was impossible. And it's found in the book of Matthew in chapter 5. Now, this is the only scripture you're going to get today, but I want to warn you, it's a doozy. I mean, at least it was for me, okay? So it was in there. Now, this one sentence, it's only one sentence, this one sentence was actually part of a bigger message that Jesus was teaching to his followers. But I got locked down on just this one thing, and here's what it said. It's found in Matthew 5:44, and it says this. Jesus says, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. Love your enemies, pray for those who persecute you. Now, this verse made me sick. Like, I didn't want it to be in the Bible at all because I read it and I thought, there's no way I can do this. Like, I can't do this. I mean, I started debating within myself of how I could justify somehow not doing this. And I thought, well, I'm going to just do a lot of the other things that Jesus said, but I won't do this. And somehow it'll cancel each other out. Like, I don't know if you do that internal rationalizing in your head, but I realized that if I was going to become the kind of person that Jesus said I could become, that I could not begin to approach the things he said with an attitude of, well, maybe I'll do it, but maybe I won't. That I was going to have to start reading the things that he said with the spirit of, I'm going to do something about this. I'm going to take action on that. But see, this verse is easy if you don't have an enemy. This verse is really, really hard if you do. And I'm not talking about enemy, like somebody that just gets on your nerves at times and you just think, ugh, I don't want to be around this person. I'm talking about an enemy, like a person who, when they walk in a room, makes you physically sick to your stomach. An enemy, somebody who has trampled carelessly and callously all over your life and left you. An enemy, somebody that honestly you could go the rest of your life and never see this person and be totally fine with that. You see, there's a part of my story that I haven't told you about yet. But if you would have rewound the dial of my life back before I was 15 and made a decision to be a Christian, back all the way to when I was 12 years old, here's what was happening in my life. The age of 12 began what was for me a very long season of abuse from a family member. I lived in fear. I lived with guilt and shame, and I had anxiety. And I thought the whole thing was my fault. I thought I created this mess that I was in. So as a result, I did not dare tell my parents. I didn't tell anybody in my life about this because I was so scared that they would be upset and disappointed in me. Because for my growing up years, there were two words that my mom and dad always used to describe me when introducing me and my siblings to people. They would say, well, this is Elaine. She's very responsible and level-headed. And that's kind of what I associated myself with. I was a responsible and level-headed person. So I could not reconcile how a responsible and level-headed person could find themselves into such a chaotic and painful mess. So as a result, you can imagine that I was not the most emotionally or relationally healthy person on the planet. But you have to remember, I was 12 years old. I was young. And so I was just trying to figure out a way to survive and protect myself. And in order to do that, I made two decisions at the age of 12. The first thing I decided was I was not going to trust men at all. It was like I took the entire male gender and I put you guys in a great big bucket and I labeled you bad, unsafe, and avoid at all cost. So there you all went, guys. Sorry about that. But the next decision that I made was that I was going to take all the undesirable emotions that I felt in my life and didn't want to deal with, and I was going to stuff them way down inside of myself. So the anger, the shame, the guilt, the pain, the fear, the anxiety all went down inside of me. And I learned how to smile and say that everything was great. Life was so good. I was a cheerleader for crying out loud, just trying to not deal with the reality of what my life was. In fact, had you known me during that time, you would not have known how desperately miserable that I actually was. So I had an enemy, and he had a name and he had a face. And the last thing in the world that I wanted to do was to love or pray for him. In fact, I kind of felt like it was a little bit insensitive that this line was in the Bible at all. I mean, Jesus, he knew my story down to every last detail. And I really thought, hey, you know my story. Like, if anybody deserves a pass on this, it is me. And I tried to imagine how it was that I was supposed to love somebody who had stolen years from my life. Couldn't fathom that. And I couldn't understand how I was supposed to pray good things over someone who had done such bad things to me. It didn't make any sense. I couldn't see how to do that. I mean, I loved Jesus. I really loved Jesus, and I wanted so badly to do what he was asking me to do. But this verse, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, was where my ability to say yes to Jesus stopped. I felt like he had crossed a line, in my opinion. But the verse wasn't changing. Every time I went back and checked, it still said the same thing. Love your enemies, pray for those who persecute you. It was not changing. And that was when I realized that I had a decision on my hands, and I was stuck. It was a major dilemma for me. So I would love to take another few minutes now that you know kind of some backstory on me, and tell you about how I began to slowly inch my way through getting unstuck from this impossible dilemma. And since you know a little bit about my past now, one of the things that shouldn't come as a surprise to you is to know that forgiveness, just like loving and praying for my enemy, was going to be one of those things that was going to make it seem impossible for me to really follow Jesus. So I told you, my early 20s, I ran across this verse. Blah, hate the verse, right? But I got to deal with it. Well, at the same time that that was happening, I was also learning about forgiveness through the messages I was hearing at church, through scriptures that I was reading, and importantly, through talking with people and processing my past with wise people that God put in my life. And through all of those things working together, I found myself confronted with the challenge to forgive my abuser. And you have to remember that the abuse had ended not so very far long ago in my life. I mean, 5 to 7 years previously. So it still felt really, really fresh to me. And I thought, you know what? God, you are expecting too much from me to expect that I can move forward and forgive this person. I mean, it hasn't been that long ago. And I thought, you know, I'm kind of into fairness with all of this whole thing. And really, I think before we move to forgiveness, I would love to see, you know, he took stuff from me, so I would love to see you do some stuff and take some things from him. I would like to see what your wrath looks like. I'd really love you to take that one out for a spin and show me on him. You don't have to kill him, but you can get him close. Would be okay with me. I really did feel that way. So I'm dealing with that in one side of my mind. And the other side of my mind, I'm really... want to move past all the pain and anger that I felt and was carrying around inside of me. But if I'm honest with you, and I have to be because we're in church, the reality of the situation was is I wanted to move past it like with a divine zap is what I wanted. So that bing, automatically I'm not dealing with pain and anger anymore. I honestly did not want to do all the work that was going to come with working through forgiveness in that situation. But in the end, I had to make a decision, and I had to decide that I was going to believe what God said about forgiveness, that I was going to trust him with it, and that I was going to act on it. So there's two things that stand out for me in that season of my life. The first thing is I decided to stop making every guy pay for what only one man did to me. And so I took that great big bucket, and I let all of you back out of it. So congratulations, guys, you're free. The second thing I remember deciding in that moment, and more importantly, I decided that if Jesus could forgive, then he could teach me how to forgive too. And so I made the decision to work through forgiveness. Now, fast forward 5 years, I'm 25 years old, and I am engaged to be married to the man that I love, and we are gonna have happily ever after. And we are in premarital counseling, and we're sitting across from our mentor couple, and the particular topic at hand that night was marital intimacy. And so my mentor couple, they were talking, and both of them turned to me, not Al, but me, and they said, hey, Elaine, we would like to give you a heads up, maybe just warn you a little bit, that if after you're married and you find yourself experiencing issues and some emotions that might be related to your past, we don't want you to be surprised about that because you're getting married. And marital intimacy, you've never experienced that before, and it's different than other kinds of intimacy. And so we just want to give you the heads up on that. And outside of my mouth said, oh, well, thank you. You are so concerned for me. I appreciate that. That's really kind. But the inside of me, I was like, that's so not going to be a problem. Like, I had already made the decision to deal with forgiveness when I was 20. I did the hard work already. There will be no issues that are going to crop up in my life. Nothing unexpected is going to happen. And besides, we are in love, right? Love's going to conquer all. Nothing is going to divide us. We will not have any problems. Well, so Al and I go ahead and we get married. And 1 year into marriage, 2 year into marriage, 3 years or so, I realized that they were right. Elaine had issues, and there was a whole new issue, no, a new set of issues that were cropping up and showing up in my marriage and in my parenting that had to do with my past. And I was angry and I was frustrated all over again because I'd already done the work before, right? And so here I am in a season of my life that is supposed to be happy and carefree. I shouldn't be burdened with anything. And yet, Al and I can't seem to get along. I can't seem to parent with any sense of boundaries at all. And I'm having problems in my marriage because of wounds that I didn't even know were there. They were deeper wounds than before. And quite honestly, it wasn't my fault. Why am I having to clean up a mess that somebody else did in my life? I was so upset because my abuser, he wasn't thinking about me, but he's all I could think about. And he was sleeping fine at night, and I was not. So I made a decision, and I decided I wasn't going to forgive him this time. I had forgiven him before, but not this time. He did not deserve forgiveness. And as only God can do, that while I'm thinking about this and contemplating walking down the road of unforgiveness, which I felt totally justified in, at the same time, one of the things that I'm realizing is, Elaine, if I choose to do this, at the same time that I choose to do this, I'm also choosing to make my husband and my children bear the burden of wounds that I was unwilling to deal with. I knew that I was going to be the cause of unhealthy and dysfunctional behaviors that were going to be caused as a result of having to navigate around my reluctance to forgive and my choice to hold on to my anger and my right for justice. I also knew that I was well on my way to becoming one of those people that you might describe as having a victim mentality. You know those people in your life, right? Where nothing's ever their fault and they're always a victim of circumstances. Well, this is how it showed up in my marriage. Al and I would have a conflict or we would have some kind of communication issue and we would have to talk about, you know, what was the wrong and how are we going to fix this? And it became apparently clear a lot of times that the bigger issue and the problem was me. But because I didn't want to deal with it, I would do this. I would tear up and I would start to cry a little bit. And then I would say, oh, honey, you deserve such a better wife than me. I'm just such a terrible wife. Look at how messed up I am. And you know, it's not really my fault, right? I mean, I wouldn't be this way if it weren't for him. He's the one that did this to me. And you can't possibly expect me to change because it's just too hard. And because he loved me, he would back off. And he would say, it's okay. It's okay. It's okay. I know this is hard for you. And guess what? I won for that round, right? I got away with it. And it felt good in the moment. But I knew it would be a matter of time before that conversation was going to come up again over something else. And so I knew that as I contemplated, maybe I should think about forgiving. I knew that that was going to require that I grow up. And that I stop using abuse as my excuse to not do the hard work of healing. I also knew that Jesus had taught me how to forgive at one level in my early 20s. And if he could teach me then, he could probably teach me again. And so I did. I made the decision to work through forgiveness, for us to work through the issues that it was causing in our marriage and with my parenting. And I did the hard work. And I will tell you this, that walking that out was much harder than the first time in my life. Now, fast forward 10 years, I'm in my mid-30s. Al and I are doing great. We are loving being married. Our kids are doing well. We love our jobs. Everything's going well. And I was able to look back over the past and see how my decisions along the way led to me reaping benefits of believing God and trusting him with my story. And then Andy, our pastor, did a message series over how Jesus loves everybody and he wants to have a relationship with everybody. And as I listened to these messages, I found myself feeling like I needed to let my abuser know that I forgave him and that I wanted him to be able to know Jesus and have a relationship with him because Jesus helped me forgive and he could help him too. Now, I never presume in those situations that that's I'm hearing from God. Like, I don't know how much of that is my emotion, how much is that the iota of being a Christian. So I ran it past my husband and I said, Al, I think that this is something that maybe God is inviting me to do. And we talked about it. And for me, meeting with him in person, it was like so not an option, because remember, my life is happy. I'm not looking to introduce another problem into my equation. I want to keep it happy. So it wasn't an option for me to go in person. And what we ended up deciding was that I would just write him a letter. And that felt great. And so I started writing the letter, and I'm writing and writing. And as I get to the end of the letter, I start getting more and more anxious. And I'm getting anxious because I know that the next step is to actually like mail the letter. And I didn't want to do that because I knew once I mailed the letter, I was going to lose control over the outcome, because I couldn't know what would happen on the other side of that equation. I didn't know what he might say or he might do, or would he show up at our doorstep, or I just couldn't know. And so I got all anxious in my head and was going crazy. And when I get that way, which is more often than you might imagine, I go back to the basics of what I believe about Jesus. And one of the things that I knew about Jesus was that he loved people that were far away from him, and that he wants to have everyone experience the freedom that he died to provide for them. And I knew that my abuser was far away from God. And one of the things that I remembered was that at one point in time in my life, I had been too. See, I was super comfortable with God loving and wanting a relationship with the people that I felt like deserved it. Just not my enemy. Just not people like my enemy. But when we say everyone, it means everyone. There are no exclusions. And so I had to decide what I was going to do. And I mailed the letter. And a couple of days went by, and a couple of weeks went by, and a couple of years went by. Nothing, nothing. I wouldn't have even known that he received the letter. But here's what I knew. I knew that I had made the right choice. It wasn't the easy choice for me, but it was the right choice. And in that, I knew that I could trust God with the outcome, whether I ever got to know about it or not. So now fast forward another 10 years, and I was invited to share my story at Brownsbridge Church, my home church, and I was excited to do that. So I was out running in my neighborhood one morning, and I was thinking about God's faithfulness over my life and just really grateful for where I was in my journey. And then clear as day, a thought comes through my head, and it's like, hey, Elaine, there's something else I'd like you to do. I'm like, oh my gosh, is this God or something? And so I'm like, okay. And it was, I want you to go to him in person, and I want you to tell him that you've forgiven him. And then I want you to tell him about me. Now, again, I'm not the most I heard from God person, and I don't think it's wise for us to always run off and just do those things. So I have a safeguard, and I run things by my husband, and I did. I ran things by him and two other people in my life, and they were all unanimous in their support and saying, hey, we think this might be God, so yeah, I think you should try it. So I called him up, and I invited him to lunch, and the very next day, we're sitting at Chick-fil-A, across from each other, and we have a very honest conversation about our past. And I told him, I just wanted to bring you here today because I want to let you know that I've forgiven you from all that. We had talked about it, and I want you to know that the reason I can forgive you is because Jesus forgave me, and he's modeled the way for me to understand what forgiveness can do for us. And I want that for you. And as I'm sitting across from him, I realize that I'm sitting across from my enemy. This is the person whose actions in my life had created so much dysfunction and havoc and pain. And yet in that moment, all I felt for him was love and compassion. This was the man who, for years in my early 20s, my prayers when I would pray to God about this person was, God, I want you to make him suffer. I want you to make him hurt. And they gradually progressed to, okay, God, maybe I won't pray for you to make him hurt and suffer. I won't pray against him anymore, but I'm certainly not going to pray for him. And to the more recent prayers, which were, God, you know what I'd really most love to see happen is for him to experience the same love and grace that you've allowed me to experience in my life. So I realized sitting there how overwhelming it was that Jesus had brought me full circle back to that verse from Matthew, that impossible verse in my 20s that said, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. And I realized that forgiveness is what had paved the way for me to love and pray for my enemy. Now, sitting across from me was this man, and I'd had this conversation, and he owned all of it. And he said, yeah, you're not crazy. Everything you're remembering is exactly what happened between us. And he said that season of life haunted him almost every day. And he did have the letter. He received it, and he'd held on to it for so many years. And he actually thanked me for having the courage to bring this up and have this conversation with him. Because he said, I'd wanted to do it many times, but I never had the courage to actually bring it up to you. And he said that my choice to forgive him finally was freeing him up to begin the process of forgiving himself. Now, what just took me about 20 minutes to share with you took over 20 years to be accomplished in my life. And it wasn't because I had some great forgiveness growth plan. I did not. You have to remember that at 20, I never could have comprehended getting to this place in my life where I was sitting across from my enemy and able to love and pray for him. It just wasn't something that I ever thought would ever happen. But what I began to realize is as I looked back over my life and I saw the series of choices that God invited me to be a part of, that the times where I was willing to believe him and trust him and what he said would be true, that was my way of connecting my little story to God's great big story. And he made it into a far greater story than it ever could have been on its own. And for me, and what I hope you hear in that this is kind of the way God is. That's what life with God is about, is where he takes stories like mine that are full of brokenness and pain, and he just invites us to hand it over to him and says, if you'll hand it to me, I can take the brokenness and the pain and the mess that you call your story, and I can make it be something great. Now, I don't know what this means for you today, because I do not know what impossible thing you're finding yourself coming up against with God. But here's what I do know, is that just because it seems impossible for you, it doesn't mean that it's not the very thing that God can use to move you past where you are to where you most want to be. The other thing I think that's really important about what we're talking about today is this. This is important because honestly, we just don't know what hangs in the balance of our choices. We just don't know what hangs in the balance of these seemingly sometimes minor, sometimes major decisions that we have to make every single day. Now, you see, there's another part of my story that I haven't told you about. And you know, I've been talking all along and said, hey, here's the spin on my story, is when you connect your story to God's story, it becomes a greater story. Well, here's another part for you. At lunch that day, I told this person that I was going to be speaking at my church. And I said, you know what? I'd love it if you want to come. Why don't you and your wife come and hear me share? It would be fine. And we could go, you know, whatever. I just felt very generous towards him. And I just wanted to know my heart towards him was right. And he declined, which wasn't shocking. He's not a follower of Christ. And he's not a church person, which was fine. But what I found out was 2 weeks later, he and his wife sat and watched the message online. And as they're watching that message online, his wife is processing a couple of things. First, she's processing the fact that she is married to the person that I'm talking about. Second thing, she's processing the fact that she has abuse in her own past from a family member. And when she was a little girl, she actually went to the adults around her and told them what was happening, and they said no, they didn't believe her. And so she learned at an early age that her telling people wasn't gonna mean they were gonna help you, that people weren't going to believe you. And so she had stuffed it down too, but she was recognizing just in hearing the story that some of her current issues were tied back to that in her life. And then the last thing she was processing was, Elaine's at a place with her story that I'm not at, and I want to be there. And so she begins this process of discovering God, and she has a bunch of questions and no answers. So what she does is she actually goes online to our church's website and starts researching, and she signs up for a group called Starting Point. And if you're not familiar with that, Starting Point is just an 8-week group that's designed for people that have questions about faith. So she registers for that. She invites her husband to come. He says, no, that is your journey. That's fine. I'll support you, but don't expect me to be a part of that. She says, okay. So the night before her group is starting, I'm like, well, she's coming to my church, and it's a little awkward, but I guess I should reach out to her and see if maybe she wants me to meet her and walk her to her group. So I did. I texted her. I said, hey, you know, this might not be what you want to do, but I would be willing to walk with you. Let me meet you so you know, you have somebody to walk with. And she texted back and said, well, that would be great. We would love for you to meet us and walk with us to Starting Point. The night before, he changed his mind and decided to go to Starting Point. And they went every single week. They didn't miss a single week. And at the end of that 8 weeks, he made this comment to his Starting Point leader, and he said, "You know, I think that I've been waiting most of my life for this." So you see, our choices are so much bigger than ourselves. I mean, they're so much bigger. God can do so much with our seemingly simple choices that we have to make. And as a church, we want to be the safest place in the whole world for you as you consider the choices that are before you today. Because honestly, we just have no idea what hangs in the balance of our stories.
Well, once again, thanks for listening. If you live in or near the city of Decatur, we would love for you to attend one of our weekend gatherings at Decatur City Church. For information, service times, and information about our fabulous children's environments and our student environments, visit us at DecaturCity.org. That's DecaturCity.org.